and welcome once again to What I Did Next from A&T Media, a show where we explore life's pivot points. I'm Malak Fouad. On this show, our guests delve into their personal and professional crossroads and discuss how they choose which way to go. These are people who are multilingual, multicultural, with roots in the Middle East. They are engaged, curious, and passionate about knowledge, aiming to leave the world a slightly better place. This episode is brought to you by Merakiz, Building Spaces for Life. Merakiz is the leading mixed-use developer in Egypt, with an ever-growing portfolio of commercial and residential projects. Visit www.merakiz.net for more information. My guest today comes from the world of advertising. Ali Ali is the co-founder of Good People Films and is one of the most highly respected and sought-after advertising directors around. The Gun Report named him one of the 10 most awarded directors in the world, and Adweek placed him amongst the top 10 most exciting directors of 2020. After studying computer science as an undergraduate, Ali realized that he preferred storyboards to motherboards and made the transition first to fine arts and then to advertising. He has lived a peripatetic life, growing up in different countries and living in several European cities in the course of his career. As you'll hear, Ali's cultural influences are quirky and off-center, and this comes across strongly in his work, penetrating the look and feel of the imagery and atmosphere, as well as the funny dialogue of his ads. It was his directorial debut for Panda Cheese that catapulted him into the big leagues, with his Never Say No to Panda campaign earning him the coveted Silver Lions Award. The ad went viral, not to mention earning itself a cult-like following along the way. We began our chat, as always, with one of the show's staple questions, and it may come as no surprise that one of Ali's ideal guests to his hypothetical dinner party is one of the world's most celebrated film directors.
Just off the bat, I think Stanley Kubrick was a British director.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson, for sure.
Was he in any of his movies?
Kubrick's movies, yeah, Shining.
Shining, yeah,
The Shining
of course.
Is directed by Stanley Kubrick, Jack Nicholson is in it. Sofia Coppola, who's another director, Francis Ford Coppola's daughter.
Yeah.
Richard Diebenkorn, who's one of my favorite painters.
I don't know him. What sort of art is it?
He's part of the San Francisco Bay Area movement, which is in 1965 to 1985. So they started after abstract expressionism in New York.
Mm-hmm.
They moved to the West Side, and he was like at the forefront of that.
What about him do you like?
His paintings. I just love his work. It was a big inspiration to me to start painting, and he was introduced to me by my art teacher in AAC.
Oh, wow. How interesting.
I think that's the list.
Anyone like personal, family, friends that you would want to include in the mix?
I'd love to have my dad back. That'll be good.
The other question I wanted to ask you was if you were to pick your favorite book,
okay,
what would you choose?
Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger was a big influence on me as a young student. And probably in my later years, I would pick Still Life with a Woodpecker, which is by a guy called Tom Robbins. Mm-hmm. Not very well known in this part of the world, but a great writer nonetheless. I think all his books are up there in my top five. So
right.
his five books are my top five books.
Wow, interesting.
Because his books basically cover culture. He used to be an art critic, so he's got lots of culture in the book. There's a lot of absurdity and religion and politics, and he just makes fun of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And his view on life is very, very interesting. He has another book called Another Roadside Attraction, where a family finds the body of Jesus and they display it as a roadside attraction somewhere in the Midwest.
Interesting.
People have to come and pay money to see it.
So there's a sort of a surreal side to all this.
Yes, yes. Another one of his books is about an Arab and a Jew that open a falafel restaurant in New York. So they're all very, I think it's called Skinny Legs and All.
Yeah, interesting.
So, yeah.
And what about your favorite film? I mean, you already alluded to Kubrick.
The Shining is definitely up there. Fargo by the Coen brothers.
That's an amazing movie.
Is another, Little Miss Sunshine. I think these are probably my top
three. So they're all kind of off the beaten track, shwaya.
Mm.
They're not your run-of-the-mill, standard, mainstream movies.
I don't know why. I'm just not attracted to... I haven't watched Lord of the Rings, for example. I haven't watched any episodes of...
Game of Thrones,
which, I mean, people always freak out when I say that.
Yeah, I haven't watched it either.
That whole genre is not... I guess I never read The Hobbit as a kid, and this genre doesn't... You know, Dungeons and Dragons and all that
but
doesn't...
But your picks are all a bit quirky, a bit off-center, but they're also quite funny.
Yes.
There's an underlying humor to all of the things you've mentioned so far.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And what about your favorite piece of music or your favorite musician...
I'd say maybe Bob Dylan. I think Amy Winehouse was brilliant talent.
Yep.
But if I had to pick one, it would be Bob Dylan.
So poetic rather than... So it's about the words as opposed to necessarily the music itself.
I think both. I mean, I his voice doesn't bother me. I mean, it bothers a lot of people, but it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So would you say it's more folky that you're interested in, or him particularly?
No, I think him particularly. I don't think I'm into any other folk art.
Right. Nice selection.
Thank you.
So I know that you grew up in Egypt.
Yes.
You went to university here. And then you did postgraduate study in the States. Would you say that that was a particular turning point for you when you actually left and decided to pursue... more of an artistic career after having done, which I believe was computer science at AUC.
Absolutely. I mean, I studied computer science with a minor in electronics to get like an engineering degree, because computer engineering did not exist at the time. It does now, but it didn't at the time. So you had to kind of design it yourself. And in my junior year of college, I started taking some art electives just by chance. And I got sucked into that big time.
And I remember you telling me that your father was very keen on you doing a sort of a standardized kind of degree.
Yes, that... definitely engineering before, you know, if you want to be an artist, you need to finish engineering first and then be an artist. My father, ironically, was also a painter. I mean, he was a Sunday painter, like he'd paint in his free time. But he was a great painter. And So that was, you know, the day I graduated, I said, I'm done with computer science and, you know, I wanted to do art. And I applied for an MFA to a couple of schools in the U.S. and I got accepted into San Francisco Art Institute with a scholarship. They have a foreign student, like two or three students that they give a merit scholarship to, and I got that and I went there for the program.
So that must have been a big sort of break in...
Yes.
A big break for you in terms of the next step.
Absolutely.
So, and how was that
experience?
A move
into the complete opposite direction.
Totally opposite. Yeah.
Yes. And then just 5 months into it, I made another move.
Tell me about that.
In a third direction. So I went to San Francisco, you know, wanting to do an MFA in painting. And very quickly I realized, one, that I wasn't that good compared to all the other people there on merit scholarship, and especially all the foreign students who were the best in there. I didn't have a bachelor's degree in painting, so my foundations were a lot weaker than everyone there.
But you still got in on a scholarship, so you must have had something that caught
their
eye. Yes,
they definitely liked the work, but when I got there and you know, realized I'm a small fish in a big pond kind of thing, there was a bit of disillusionment there. And of course, the fact that very few people in the program were painting. Maybe me and like two others. The rest were doing video art, you know, conceptual art, installations.
That wasn't what you were interested in.
No, and it was, obviously that's where art was heading at the time. And that's what the, you know,
and
zeitgeist was. And
when is this? Like the early 90s?
No, I'm not that old.
No, you're not actually. Sorry.
This is in 2002.
Okay. Yeah. So that was, there was a big movement at the time towards more conceptual.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I didn't fit in, you know, and San Francisco was very foggy and rainy. I wanted to move on to, you know, better weather. And so I visited a friend of mine in Miami, and it seemed like, you know, a much better place to live. And I looked for art schools there, or, you know, graphic design schools, and didn't find any. But I stumbled on Miami Ad School, which is an advertising program focusing on art direction and filmmaking and things like that. And I made that move.
But did you already have an interest in that field, or did you?
Yes, by nature of, you know, art and computer science.
Yeah, so it kind of melds them together.
Graphic design is kind of like a go-between these. And obviously I wanted to do something more marketable to please my parents and, you know, not be the crazy painter who's not going to make money.
And did you find that was the right move, and looking back? I mean,
God knows.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Of course, but you'll never know.
Yeah, but definitely now I feel that was a very, you know, I'm very grateful for that move. And that visit I made to Miami was
And how
a
long
life-changer.
Was that course?
That was a 2-year program, and I finished a bit early to do an internship in Romania, funnily enough.
How did that come about?
I basically, towards your last quarter in a school, the school was quarters and not semesters, so it's divided into 4 quarters a year. And in your last 2 quarters, you're entitled to a working internship, which you basically apply to in different states. And if you want to, you can apply to agencies abroad. And I remember I got accepted into an internship at BBDO New York, which was at the time one of the hottest agencies, I think, in the world. And I got accepted into an unknown agency called Darcy in Bucharest. And I decided to take the Bucharest one, which was very counterintuitive at the time. You know, everybody told me you should obviously go to New York.
Yeah, that's a really interesting choice.
Yes.
What made you take that leap? Because it's a bit of a leap of faith, actually.
Yes. I mean, one of the deciding factors was my girlfriend was Romanian. We met at school, and she was going back home. So I figured
so
I can
always follow the girl.
Yes, always.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was probably the main reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Which sounds stupid at the moment, but
well, actually, I know a lot of people whose lives have kind of have changed because of something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
and
you
the funny thing is we broke up like a month into being in Romania. Yeah. So it was just
But you stayed on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think she was just there to lead me to Romania somehow. And all my friends who ended up going to BBDO New York were just, you know, photocopying papers, running errands, you know, making coffee.
Menial work.
Yeah, it was a kind of a humiliating internship because of how great the place was.
Of course.
As opposed to my internship where I was, you know, the golden boy coming from Miami to Romania and with all the know-how. And, you know, I got on the biggest projects all of a sudden and, you know, shoots. And
that company was an American company?
Yes, yes.
And why
Romania,
were they in Romania?
Romania at the time was just coming out of, you know, the Eastern Bloc. And McDonald's and Coca-Cola had just opened. And Darcy was their agency in many parts of the world. So that agency opened up just to serve these two clients initially.
And so Romania was the base, but presumably working in the area generally around around Romania as well.
Yes, and Romania is actually quite a very strong creative country in Eastern Europe.
Right.
Amongst the Eastern European ones, I'd say Romania is probably the best. I mean, Warsaw more in graphic design and poster design, but Romania in creative advertising.
And how long were you there for?
A year and a few months, just over a year.
And what did you learn, or how did that shape your next move?
Yeah, so basically I'd say I learned confidence and, you know, a bit of art direction from my creative director there, who was a guy called Mihai, who was very, you know, very meticulous about art direction and design and typography and stuff like that. So it was very helpful to work under him. And we won a couple of awards at a show called The Golden Drums, which is like the Cannes Awards, but for Eastern Europe. It's strictly an Eastern European show. And the head of the jury there was a guy called Tim Delaney, who runs an agency called Legs Delaney in London.
It's very well known.
So yeah, we had breakfast the next day, and he asked me to come to Legs Delaney Hamburg, which was, again, just opening up part of his Legs Delaney chain. And
It's a very creative agency.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a boutique agency in Hamburg. They had a lot of accounts at the time. They had the Grunan Jahr, which is the biggest publication house or publishing house in Germany. And they had Der Stern, which is the biggest magazine there. They had Skoda, the car. Mm-hmm. They had Orangina. They had a couple of interesting accounts. Wrangler jeans.
And you worked on those?
Most of them, yes. And so I moved to Hamburg. That was another pivot.
Right. What was that pivot like for you? I mean, was it a pivot, obviously in terms of your profession, you went up the ladder.
Yes, absolutely.
But did it also pivot for you personally? Were there things that were single at the time?
Yes.
So you were able to move around quite freely?
Yes. And obviously the German culture leaves its mark on anyone who's lived there. You know, Germany is very polarizing. It's not...
Really?
Yeah, you can't live in Germany and leave unaffected.
Really? In what way? Yes.
Just everything. The Germans are very, you know... I think they're very correct in many things, and they...
Do you speak the language?
No.
Was that a problem?
Very little. In a lot of... in a sense, yes, but they'd always, speak in English for me in the meetings.
And, yeah.
But there'd always be the occasional, Ali, we're going to do Auf Deutsch now, and they turn German. But I mean, I wrote all my copy in English and someone would translate
they translated.
My copywriter was German. And
I'd never heard of anyone saying Germany is polarizing.
No, I mean, it's not polarizing. It's a very dominant culture that, rubs off on you and leaves you with a lot of things that stay with you forever,
Like what? How did
that? Like bike riding, love of nature, just the simple life they have. Like all the buildings don't have elevators, climbing up. I lived on a fifth floor and I'd go up the stairs with bags and,
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I don't know Germany well at all.
No, and Hamburg is a very green city and there are no plastic bags.
Yeah.
You go to the supermarket with the same bag over and over.
Do you think that ethos influences your work now?
Not my work, but my personality for sure.
In what way?
In just, caring for the environment.
Yeah.
How liberal I've become is also from, living in Hamburg.
So you were not as liberal before?
Probably not.
It opened your eyes to a certain...
To a lot of things.
To a different thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and again, Hamburg is very a-religious.
Yeah.
And Germany in general, obviously.
Religion it's interesting
no
about
presence there.
That. I mean, it's like they've tried to go 360 and become overly tolerant about everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything. I mean, it's no surprise that they allowed all the refugees in,
Of course.
Merkel. I mean, this is... They're very profound and noble culture. They're elevated and very civilized.
Do you feel that it comes naturally or that it comes as a reaction to the war history? That it's a
obviously
reaction?
It's helped
big
time.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a big guilty conscience on that whole thing, especially the generation that I was dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's also tabooed and you don't talk about it, obviously. First rule of
it's
Germany.
It's like ingrained,
you
don't talk about it.
You do not talk about
it
at all.
Yeah.
And I remember the movie, The Untergang, which was about Hitler's last days, coming out when I was there. And I went with a couple of people from the agency to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very shocking to see
their reactions.
They wept like crazy.
Oh, really?
Throughout the film, yeah.
It's like collective guilt.
Yes.
They have that sense.
They have an amazing guilt towards that. But yeah, it's made them better.
It's incredible.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't have much to say about their advertising. I mean, Germans are very rational, obviously, and advertising, or at least good advertising, comes from the heart.
Yeah, it's emotional.
Yes, it's emotional. It comes from the heart, comes from the gut. And they are very rational about their advertising. They research everything. And, their ideas are very cerebral and not necessarily
funny. So did you find,
funny.
For you, that you reached a ceiling very quickly because you were not...
No, I mean...
You didn't think in that way?
I mean, again, I went there with a very high image of German advertising, thinking it's like the best, and again disillusionment, and they're not really that good.
Well, you can say that, but you can also say perhaps that you took what you needed to take from them.
Yes, absolutely.
In terms of what you could learn.
Yes,
and then move on to the next phase.
Yes, absolutely. And I'd say that's graphic design is huge in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Every presentation looks their decks look perfect and neat, and I worked again under an art director, a creative director called Herman Votterkamp, who was, he's one of the guys that designed the Audi logo. Like he's up there.
He's an icon.
So yeah, that was Hamburg for 2 years.
Right.
Then my father had a stroke when I was in Hamburg, back in Cairo.
And your father, from what you had said to me, had also a very multidisciplinary life.
Absolutely, absolutely. My father believed that one should change disciplines every 10 years.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Because for that generation, who were used to being in one job for life,
my father was very progressive.
Very
progressive
attitude.
Extremely progressive, yeah. He believed two things, that one should continue to learn forever.
Yeah.
Education is not something that's limited to your, early years.
Absolutely.
You should constantly be learning and going to schools and taking classes and stuff like that. And that one should switch careers, every 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he's done. He went from an aeronautical engineer to being a pilot, to computer engineering, to computer science, to linguistics, And he died as a linguist and a novelist. So
that can perhaps explain why you had no fear after AUC to just jump into something completely different.
Maybe, I think so.
You had that as an example already.
Yes, I think so.
So you mentioned he had a stroke.
Yes,
when
he had
you
a stroke
in Hamburg.
2005, 2006, I think it was. And I moved back to Cairo, predominantly to help my mother out and to be there. And I joined an agency called Leo Burnett. And again, when I came back, there were a couple of agencies that wanted to hire me. And I think Leo Burnett offered me the least salary. And there was another agency, without mentioning names, that offered me double that salary. So again, it was very counterintuitive to go to Leo Burnett.
What made you make that choice?
At the time, they were doing the best ads. You know, I did a bit of research before coming back. And, you know, they got it the most, I think. And there was a guy there called Muhammad Hamdallah, who's, you know, one of the legends in advertising here, still is. And, you know, I wanted to work under him, under his mentorship, as opposed to anyone else.
How did you feel about moving back to Cairo?
I mean, good and bad. It's always like that when you move back to Cairo.
There's a lot of...
Yes.
The pull is very strong,
the
but
pull
also
is very strong,
the...
You know, socially and friends and family.
Of course.
But then, you know, all the things that obviously...
That hinder that too.
Yes.
So that was what, 2005?
End of 2005, beginning of 2006.
And you came into Leo Burnett in what position?
As an associate creative director, which was a bit of a leap because, you know, prior to that, I was a junior art director in Germany.
But also you had never worked in Egypt.
Yeah, and I might have lied a little bit in my CV and said I've had like 5-6 years of experience when I only had 3.
But it didn't seem to matter.
No.
Yeah.
I felt confident enough to be in that position.
Yeah, yeah.
I felt like.
And how was that experience? How long were you there for?
I'd say a year and a half, a year and 8 months.
That's pretty short.
Yes, but it was great. It was like an intensive film school for me. I worked on Mubinil, which is now Orange. I did a lot of Mubinil ads. I worked on Melody, Melody Aflam.
Yeah.
Not Melody Aflam, but Melody Music.
How did working in Egyptian media, how did you find that? Because it's not easy to transition from a European style or a European focus to an Egyptian way of selling a product. It's
yes.
a completely different ballgame.
Things are a lot faster here. Like, whereas Germany, a campaign would take 6 months of research and approvals and global approvals. We'd get a brief from Mubinil that wants to air next week.
Oh, that's really? That fast?
So it's a very different pace.
But even how you're approaching it from a content perspective, your audience is a completely different animal in Egypt to what it is in Europe or in the States.
Yes.
How did you make that transition?
I think it came very gradually. I mean, I think probably the first 6-7 months I was just soaking everything in.
Yeah.
Trying to understand how it works here. But it was a lot of fun writing ads for your same culture.
Sure.
You can pull into a lot of your cultural references, which I didn't have in Germany,
obviously. Sure, sure. And the fast pace of it also is more fun.
Yes, but the insights here are something you've had for life. So
of course. It's instinctive.
Of course. No, I think these 2 years were very enjoyable and highly educational for me.
What did you learn from a personal perspective coming back to look after your mom and help out with your... With your family, how was that? Because you were quite young at the time to be burdened with that. That's a lot to be handling.
Not on my own. I mean, I have 2 sisters.
Sure.
So it wasn't just me. Yeah. You know, and it's.
But it's still a big responsibility.
Yes, but it felt good being back. I think it was the right thing to do, and it was the right place.
You were ready
right
to
time.
Leave, maybe where you were. Also.
Yes, and Germany is a lot slower as well. I mean, my copywriter in Germany at the time, who was more senior than I was when I joined the agency, is still pretty much a senior copywriter now, or an associate creative director.
Yeah, more stagnant. The
15 years later.
The ladder is less...
Yes, we basically plateau, and moving up is very rigid, and whereas here it's like skyrocketing. You don't get...
So looking back now, it's been 15 years that you've been back.
I didn't stay back.
You didn't stay back?
No.
So what did you do next?
I move every, 2 years or so. So from Leo Burnett, I moved. I had a very brief stint at JWT in Cairo for 3 months.
Mm-hmm. 3 months?
Yes.
Wow, that is short.
That is very short. Yeah. They basically doubled my salary, what I was making at Leo Burnett at the time. It was a very kind of monetary move.
Mm-hmm.
And, 3 months later, I realized, you know, I'm not learning at this place. It's not for me.
Right.
And I didn't respect my creative director at the time, who was my boss. I came there as creative director, but I had an ECD above me. Again, not mentioning names, but right. I had very little respect for him.
Fair enough. When you have a bad boss or a boss you don't get along with, it completely ruins everything.
Exactly. Yeah. And at the time, I got approached by an agency in Dubai.
Right.
Coincidentally, I wanted to leave, and they approached me, so it was a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to give Dubai a try. So I went to Dubai for a year and a half with FP7 as a creative director.
Strong agency.
Strong agency, lots of local clients in Dubai, and but didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
Didn't like being in Dubai.
But I think also that sort of environment, it's very corporate. It's very standardized.
Yes, very corporate, big building with
and very little room for creativity.
Yeah, every creative brief would have like something called a job bag where you put in your ideas in a bag at the end, and it circulates. It was a very weird system.
Before we met for today's show, I had listened to a conference that you had done in Durban,
yes.
in South Africa.
Yes.
And it was the top 20 things I hate about advertising.
10 stupid things I learned in advertising.
10 stupid things I learned in advertising. And it's hilarious.
Of good ads and good fun. But unfortunately, you meet a lot of people who take this job too seriously. And they make you feel like the deadline is the end of the world. Or, you know, that PPM document is the most important thing ever, you know. But no one dies when you don't air on Tuesday, you know. So
it's very cynical.
Mm-hmm.
You seemed pretty fed up with the environment you were working in at the time.
Yes, that was after I left advertising. I was directing at the time. This was in 2015, I think.
Mm-hmm. So that's only 5 years ago.
Yes, I had been directing for maybe 4 years and I had already quit advertising.
Yeah.
As like agency life. So that was, you know, looking back.
Yeah, it was pretty funny though.
Yeah.
And it was pretty accurate.
Yeah.
So tell us about what you're doing now.
I'm a director at the moment. I also co-founded a production house 3 years ago called Good People, which very recently merged with a digital agency called Kijami.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're called GP&K.
Mm-hmm.
And we are a, you know, full media agency from production to, I mean, we call ourselves a digital agency because, I mean, by default, any agency today is...
Exactly. It's always digital now.
Yes, of course. I mean, if you're not, you're a dinosaur.
Of course. But what is the work you actually do? It's Bardu Advertising.
Yes.
It's within the advertising space.
Absolutely, yes. It's
but
advertising.
But you're your own entity, or don't work for an agency.
No.
You are an agency.
I mean, I still direct, mm-hmm. so I could direct spots for different agencies. I'm working on one with Leo Burnett now at mm-hmm. the moment for Orange. And we also write and direct our own stuff.
But does that mean that the industry itself is changing? If you are now an independent agent, but advertising agents are hiring you,
mm-hmm.
how does that work? Don't they normally do things in-house?
I think at the moment, there's a lot of... it's being deconstructed. I mean, in the past, it was always the four big names.
Yeah.
You know, everybody worked with them.
And it was all in-house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's the polar opposite.
Right.
There's a lot of small boutiques and small shops, and brands are diversifying mm-hmm. who they work with. And, you know, so Pepsi has always been BBDO.
Yeah.
Now Pepsi briefs out all their briefs to all the small agencies and independent agencies. So it's a very natural progression given the digital era that we're in.
Do you think, though, advertising as well is taking a bit of a leaf out of the indie movie book?
Yes.
There is a lot of that feel where the big brands are now looking for alternative imagery and creativity. It's not the standardized mainstream
anymore. And also it's powered by technology because, you know, there's no barrier to entry anymore. Any two guys in, you know, Masr Gdid in an apartment can shoot an ad on their iPhone and make it great if it's creative enough, you know, and it would run on YouTube or Vimeo or whatever. And
as a creative director, are you very conscious of the idea of producing something that will go viral, knowing that that's exactly how things are today?
I mean, I think you cannot predict virality.
No.
I mean, it's very funny because a lot of times you get a client that says, I want a viral ad, you know, and
yeah,
viral ads either happen or they
absolutely.
Don't. You know, it's not a guaranteed
absolutely.
But with time, you get a gut feeling that this is, you know, this is going to resonate with people.
And I think for that, you do you have to have a universality, or do you have to be very localized in your approach?
In my experience, a lot of the ads I've done that have been local are the ones that viraled in Egypt, at least. That had a local joke, or, you know.
But there have been a couple, like the panda advertisement that you did that went global.
Yes.
And yet it's extremely local.
Yes.
How can you explain that? That's kind of an
anomaly.
That was
a freak. It was a freak phenomenon.
Yeah, honestly.
I mean, panda has over 200 million views on YouTube.
Probably because it's completely surreal.
Yes. And
it transcends borders.
Yes. And it's, you know, I was in Italy once and... in Capri, actually, in a small bar, and the guy had a Never Say No to Panda poster behind the bar, and I told him I did this ad, and he didn't believe me, of course.
Yeah, that's a really weird feeling.
Yes, and he, you know, gave us shots and drinks for free and stuff. Yeah. He was a big fan. A friend of mine got me a Never Say No to Panda t-shirt from China. So they're being sold, you know, counterfeit t-shirts, mugs.
But they probably are being produced without even realizing what they
are.
Yeah,
of course.
They just like the slogan.
Yeah, it just became a culture.
It became a thing.
The gif of the panda destroying the desk is still very much circulated today.
Yeah.
Every now and then someone sends it to me from, you know, Facebook or Instagram. So, I mean, that was I got very lucky very early in my career because that was one of the first campaigns I directed.
And that was with which agency?
That was with Elephant.
In Cairo?
Yeah.
So out of the things we've spoken of, or maybe things we haven't spoken of, what would you say was a major pivot for you, or a major moment where you were faced with a fork in the road and you decided consciously to go either this way or that way?
I think two major forks. One was when I quit art for advertising. And that was a big, you know, kind of the selling out.
In your studies at the beginning?
Yes.
Yeah.
And when I left San Francisco for Miami Ad School, basically. And another major fork is when I quit advertising to direct. And that was a very difficult fork because I didn't mention that, but my last stint in advertising was as the ECD of DDB Berlin, which is a very hot
shop. Of course,
shop.
Of course.
And living in Berlin, of course, is fantastic. And, you know, I was back in German advertising, which I don't love very much,
But you came in at from a point of strength
and
experience.
As an MD and just to change the culture and stuff like that. And I left this to direct. So it was a very, you know, hard. It's not something I decided overnight. You know, I had to talk to people. And
that was when?
And that was in 2012. Again, the agency held on to me very strongly and they became very antagonizing when I insisted on leaving. It wasn't easy, you know.
Right.
But again, looking back now,
you felt it was the right choice?
100%.
These two pivots that we talked about,
These
were instinctive, right? You made these choices from a feeling of instinct.
Yes.
You didn't, it was heart over head.
100%.
Yeah.
The head said the complete opposite every time. Yeah. In your heart of hearts, you always kind of know what it is.
For sure.
You know? And I think all these pivots kind of connect somehow in the end.
Yeah.
And they all help you in certain ways.
You know that we talked about it, the
Steve Jobs
interview where he did, you know,
connect
early
the dots.
On, connect the dots. And he had this, you know, he left college, but hung around and did some random courses that influenced the future of Apple. I mean,
And in his biography, Isaacson also talks about a typography course that Steve Jobs,
the calligraphy course.
Took on very early.
Absolutely.
And how that has shaped, you know, the graphic design at Apple that still
absolutely
exists today.
And it's, you have all these foundational things that build and form your character without even realizing it.
Yeah. So engineering today really helps me systematically approach briefs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very computer science in my thinking and flow chart in my, you know, process.
And that probably helped you navigate Germany.
Yes.
As well.
Absolutely.
Having that background.
Logic, yeah.
You understood on a deep level how the country functioned.
Yes.
So what's next for you, Ali?
Hopefully features. I'm working on a short now and also developing a series. So I have a couple of projects in parallel.
In Egypt?
Yes.
Arabic language or English language?
Arabic language.
Arabic language.
Yes.
And you write in Arabic or you write in English?
Both.
You're comfortable in both?
I write the descriptions in English and I write the dialogue in Arabic.
So that's what, are you doing that full time? No, you're,
no,
that's
no.
A, that's
I'm
a,
still I'm still running Good
right,
People and,
right.
and directing and writing.
Interesting.
Ads. Yeah, need to pay the bills.
Amazing, Ali. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was great.
Thank you.
I'm very glad we did this.
Yes, me too.
enjoyed listening to life through Ali's lens. You'll find links to some of his work, including his 10 Stupid Things talk in Durban, in the show notes in your podcast player. This episode of What I Did Next is brought to you by A&T Media with me, Malak Fouad, and is co-produced by Chirag Desai. I love hearing from you, so please connect with us on Instagram by searching for What I Did Next and leaving us a message. I look forward to having you join me again in 2 weeks' time.